Welcome to the DuPage Vineyard Teaching Channel. Thank you for joining us.
Like I said, we started a series on financial peace, and we started talking last week how the area of finances, of money for a lot of us, is one of the biggest stressors that we have in life, if not the biggest. It touches everything. It's actually one of the top causes of divorce today. It's a source of conflict, of worry, of stress, and it doesn't matter how much you have, it seems to have that effect often on everybody. For most of us, if I said, describe your financial picture in one word, most of you would not pick the word peaceful. There's a lot of other words you might pick. Peaceful is probably not one of them, but it is possible. I think it's safe to say, I can simply be saying, no father on earth wants his children worrying about money. That's just not part of the picture of a heart of any good dad. In heaven, I don't think anybody's worrying about, where's my next meal going to come from? No one in heaven is worrying about money, finances, bills, any of that. They're walking on streets of gold, so there's no lack if they needed any. But heaven is where God's will is perfectly done. And so if I look at something, I say, this doesn't exist in heaven. To me, that says this is not part of what God has for us. I don't think there's any worry or stress in heaven, especially about finances. So I'll get that and say, then that's really not what God intends for us here on earth either. Now, that doesn't mean it's not our reality often, but it's not what God intends. I really believe it's possible to not be ruled by worry or fear or have that be an area of stress in your life. It doesn't have to be that way. That's not what God intends. Now, I say that knowing full well that a lot of you are nodding your head on the outside and inside you're shaking your head the other way saying, yeah, that's not true, Dave. In our hearts, most of us think that you're right. I would have less stress if I had more money. On average, about $10,000 a year more. That's what the number is that surveys have shown. Most people think if I had that much more money, I'd be at peace. And I'm here to joyfully tell you today that you're completely wrong. And I'm not saying that having more isn't a good thing. I think that's fine. But don't deceive yourself that having more is suddenly going to bring you peace, is going to relieve you of stress. That's not the reality. So what I want to do today, actually, is talk about two key things that are, in my opinion, the key obstacles, the biggest hindrances or barriers to you having peace in the area of your finances. There are two things that more than anything else steal our peace and create worry and stress for us. One of those is a spiritual issue, one of them is a practical issue, and I want to hit both of them just in order. Now, before I even do that, though, I want to just look and say, does the Bible actually agree with me? It's probably safer to say, do I agree with it, right? About this thing, is peace even possible? Is that something? Well, Paul, in Philippians 4, said this. We can put that up there, right? 4:11-13, and Paul is writing to the Philippians because they've been supporting him financially in his mission endeavors, and part of Philippians is just a thank you letter and an update on, hey, here's what's going on. But he ends it by saying, I have learned to be content whatever the circumstances. And content in this context means to be at peace. I've learned to be content whatever the circumstances. I know what it is to be in need, and I know what it is to have plenty. I have learned the secret of being content in any and every situation, whether well-fed or hungry, whether living in plenty or in want. I can do everything through him who gives me strength. Now, that's a pretty strong statement. I've learned to be content no matter what. I have peace in this area of my life no matter what. No matter if I've got tons of money in the bank, if I've got just got a support check for $50,000 and I only needed $100, don't know where my next meal is coming from. I have learned to be content no matter what. I have peace no matter what. So it is possible because Paul had it. And he is a human being just like you and I. Now, a couple of things about that verse to pull out. One, he said it's got nothing to do with how much money he had, so you can have peace whether you've got a lot or a little. Secondly, though, it's something he learned. He said, I've learned the secret. He didn't wake up someday going, wow, I feel so peaceful. thank you, God, this is wonderful. It was something he learned. And whenever you see the word learned in Scripture like that, you can be sure that what that meant was that over time, God grew something in his life. Over time, he learned how to have peace in different situations. That meant he went through those different situations and learned in the midst of them. He learned when he had plenty how to have peace. I suspect that was the easier lesson. He also learned when he didn't know where his next meal was coming from, how to have peace. You only learn that by going through it. You learn it by going through it and discovering, oh, God is faithful. God is with me. I can do this. Okay? It grows over time. And he ends up by saying, you know, the last part of that verse, I can do everything through him who gives me strength. So somehow in the learning process, what he discovered was that, wait a minute, God is with me in this. I'm not on my own. This isn't just about my ability to provide, my ability to get the next meal, my ability to make more money. There is a God component of this at work here. And he learned that by being in those situations and seeing God come through for him time after time after time. I suspect not always in ways he would have predicted. Sometimes in ways that probably completely surprised him. But he saw, he can do, man, I can do this because God is with me. This is a God thing. So it is possible. Not possible because you're suddenly going to figure out, okay, I'm going to be at peace. Some of us get really stressful trying to be at peace. You know, like, I'm going to be at peace. I'm not going to worry. I'm not going to worry. I'm so worried. Right? You know, you've been there, right? But there's a God component of this. You realize, okay, God is with me as he walked through it. So I want to just be clear on that. It is possible. Paul did it, and you see, I could give you a list of people throughout history who've said, man, I've learned how to do this. This is a reality. This is what God intends. It's not supposed to be an area of worry, of stress, of striving. So let's look at the two obstacles. Let's just jump right into them. The first one, like I said, the spiritual obstacle comes out of 1 Timothy 6, 17 and 18. So I want to put it up there. This is Paul writing. He says, command those who are rich in this present world. I know some of you immediately think, okay, this doesn't apply to me. We'll get to that in a second. Not to be arrogant, nor to put their hope in wealth, which is so uncertain, but to put their hope in God, who richly provides us with everything for our enjoyment. Command them to do good, to be rich in good deeds, and be generous and willing to share. Now, let's just leave that up there for a minute, because I'll point out a couple of things. First of all, I want to just be really clear for all of us. Don't be fooled when it says this only applies to the rich in this present world. I'm not going to ask for a show of hands, but I know in any room I'm in, the majority aren't going to say, I'm rich. In our culture, even if you are, you're not going to raise your hand. So that's fine. But let me be clear. The median income globally right now is just a little over $100 a month, roughly about $102. So if you're making more than $102 a month, you're already in the upper half of income levels across the world, around the world. If you have the ability to work 5 days a week and get food and shelter for seven, you're in an unusually good place in our world. Understand? If you can provide 7 days of food and shelter on 5 days of work, you're at a really good place. Some of you are actually wrestling with what one guy I heard he called rich people problems. You know what a rich person problem is? Here's a rich person problem. A rich person will be at home and get hungry. And they'll go over the refrigerator and open it up and look at multiple shelves filled with, oh, there's milk and juice and water. Here's leftovers. Boy, there's some meat and cheese and eggs and butter. And then here's some vegetables and fruit. And opens up and looks at it all, and you know what they say? There's nothing to eat. That's a rich person problem, okay? That's, you know, they don't say that in Mozambique, okay? Second thing they do is they'll get up and they decide, oh, I got to get dressed and get to work, or I got to go wherever I got to go. And they'll go in their closet and look at it. You know what they'll see? See a big section of work clothes, and then they'll see their casual hangout-at-home clothes, and then some workout clothes. Then, depending on your closet, you'll have summer and winter clothes. Then, depending on your history, you might have some fat and skinny clothes. And you know what that rich person says? He looks at that all and says, I got nothing to wear. Right? Rich person problem. I know none of you have ever said either of those things, but in Mozambique, if you want water, every day you get a big jug or pail or something and you trek however far you have to go to the well and you fill up water and that's your water for the day, and then you carry it back sometimes a few miles back to wherever you live. That's your water for the day. You know what rich people do? They take water and they spray it on their lawn. They spray on their lawn. And you know why they do that? They do that so their grass will grow so that then they can cut it and then they put more on so it grows again. You know, no one in Mozambique is doing that. So this might apply to you, even if at first you didn't think, I'm rich. You might be better off than you think. And his warning to the rich, he said, riches are deceptive. They make promises that they can't keep. They promise to provide you security and safety and protect you from the ups and downs of the world, and they just can't keep them. You know, when it says put your hope in wealth or hope in riches or hope in God, it's talking about where's your confidence? Where's your trust? If you believe that you can save your way to safety economically, then you're putting your hope in wealth. Okay? If you think that the size of your bank account is going to provide you security and protect you from whatever is going to happen in life, you're putting your hope in wealth. If your mindset is, if I just had a little bit more, I'd be okay, that's what I would call the first obstacle of peace, is misplaced hope. You're putting your hope in the wrong thing. Because, first of all, I'm not going to ask again for a show of hands, although I'm so tempted. If you've ever said that to yourself, if I just had a little bit more, I'd be fine, I would bet almost anything that a few years ago when you were making a lot less, you were saying the same thing. Follow me? If I just had a little bit more, and now 2, 3, 4, 5 years later, you've got a little bit more, and you're saying, if I just had a little bit more. And when you get that, I can almost promise you that, guess what you're going to say? If I just had a little bit more. Because it's an empty promise. You can never be sure. Because you notice in the verse it says, don't put your hope in wealth, which is so uncertain. It's not something you can really count on. In our heart of hearts, we know that. We know that wealth can disappear through no fault of your own. People saw that in the Great Depression. In this last economic season, many people have found, you know what? I didn't necessarily do anything wrong, but my company downsized or went bankrupt. I lost my job. I haven't been able to get a new one. And through no fault of your own, boom, your finances were in the tank. Wealth is so uncertain. Now, sometimes it's uncertain because we make our own bad choices. There's probably not a person in here at some point who can't look back and say, you know, I wish I hadn't done that. I should have done that. I should have done that back then. We all have a history of them. I was looking up this week. Some of you remember Mike Tyson, considered by many one of the greatest boxers ever, declared bankruptcy. He made $300 million in his career. $300 million declared bankruptcy. Whitney Houston, one of the best-selling musical artists of all time, died penniless. She was actually living off friends' generosity. Some of you know who Allen Iverson is, considered one of the, you know, basketball player. In his 12 to 15-year career, he made between his salary and endorsements roughly $200 million. Declared bankruptcy. Donald Trump, famous for hair and ego, 2004 declared bankruptcy. 9 years ago. He had it. He lost it. He's got it again. I'm not placing any bets on his future. Because wealth is so uncertain. See, deep down, there's something that no matter how much you have, you feel like you don't have enough. One of my favorite preachers to listen to is a guy named Andy Stanley. He's from a church down in Atlanta. I think he's one of the best communicators in the whole world. I was listening to him talk, and he was describing a meeting he had, like a meal, a sit-down meal, with a couple that were billionaires. Billionaires with a B. And the wife was talking about how, you know, these are perilous times. You know, you got to be careful with your money. You just can't, you got to be careful. You know, you can't, and I thought, a billionaire. Now, I did the math. If you put $1 billion in a bank and get a 0.5% to 1% interest, which is like nothing, you can spend $1 million a month for the next 100 years and not spend it all. Okay, now that's tough to do, right? I can get through $1 million a month for a few months. After that, I'm pretty much done. You know, I mean, give it to everyone I care about. They all get $1 million, and you know, I know I'd suddenly get a lot more friends if I did that, but maybe it would go fast. See, but there was this sense of, I'm not sure we've got enough. Because stuff can happen. Wealth is so uncertain, you can't count on it. And so it's dangerous. So if you're putting your hope in wealth, if you're thinking, if I just had more, if I could just do this, you are almost guaranteeing yourself a level of worry and stress. Because more does not give you peace. It actually just gives you more to worry about. See, you're actually designed, I think, by God to want more of the things that are most important to you. You want more of the things that you hope for, more of the things you love. If you love your family, the odds are you want more time with your family. Okay? If you love a certain person, you want more time with that person. That's just the way we're designed. We want more. If you love God most of all, you're going to want more of God. If you love money, or your hope is in money, you think it's going to be right, you're going to naturally want more of money. You're never going to be satisfied. It's just not going to happen. That's the way we're designed, because there's a built-in dissatisfaction that makes you want more no matter what you've got. Okay. Better to put your hope in God. That's what Paul says. Don't put your hope in money because it's so uncertain. You want peace. You want to be content. Put your hope in God. Practice doing that. Practice believing that God is my source. God is going to provide for me. God is the one I'm trusting. And it doesn't mean you don't work hard. It doesn't mean you don't respond. So I'm not saying that. But underneath it all, it's believing that God will provide. And remember, Paul said he learned that. Here's what learning that looks like. Learning that looks like whatever situation you're in, you start to say, oh, okay, Lord, I'm going to trust you. I'm putting my hope in you that you're going to show me what to do or provide for me or show me the way out or whatever. I'm putting my hope in you, God. And then what happens is in the midst of it, fear starts to rise up, and you get nervous, and it feels like, you keep saying, okay, I'm going to trust you, God. It doesn't feel like you're trusting God. It feels like you're in panic mode, but you keep choosing it, and over time, then God comes through, and you realize, oh, wait a minute, that worked. God actually showed up. He honored that. He came through. And then the next time it happens, you go through the same thing, and over time, you learn to be content. Your peace grows. Here's the thing. In the beginning, it often feels like you're failing because you don't always have this abundance of peace in the beginning. Sometimes you get it right away. Sometimes you fight for it and it comes and goes, but over time, it grows. Over time, you learn how to trust God. You learn how to put your hope there, and you see Him coming through for you, and that experience releases peace. That's what it looks like. So if you're in the process right now of saying, God, I trust you. I don't know how this is going to work out. I feel a little bit afraid, but God, I'm choosing to trust you. You are in a great place. You are in the learning process, watching God teach you peace and build it into your life. So the first obstacle to peace is just simply misplaced hope. What are you hoping in? Because you'll never really be completely at peace in the financial area if your confidence is in how big your bank account is or how much money you have. It's not going to happen. Okay, second one. Second obstacle. First one, misplaced hope. Second one is very practically lack of margin. You know what margin is? If you remember when you were in school, you had a little paper, you had to write out your answers. I know now it's all on computer half the time, but we had to do it actually with pen and paper. And, you know, you get out that paper, and it had a little red line on the sides, and you were supposed to write between the lines. You weren't supposed to write from one edge of the paper all the way out to the edge of the paper. And if you tried that, if you've ever seen someone do that, you know, it looks completely chaotic. It's like you don't, it's almost impossible to read. Margin is a gap. It's a gap between where you end and your overall limits and where you're actually ending. There's a gap. You need to have a gap margin in your finances. Now, our world is set up to allow you to not have margin because as soon as you hit that, what can you do? You can borrow more. So you can completely ignore the edge of the page and go further and further out, which creates more and more debt, which creates more and more stress, which then is a downward cycle. But what you can do is have margin. Margin is embracing a space between what is going out and what is coming in. And saying that, you know what, I'm going to have a space there, I'm going to have a gap. It creates breathing room. Let me put it this way. Have you ever felt wealthy? I have. You know when I really felt wealthy, well off? In high school. In high school, I had a job. And I was working probably an average of about 20 hours a week. And then I remember getting the raise up to $2.50 an hour. 20 hours a week plus, I'm making $50 a week. And I'm thinking, this is awesome. This is amazing, I'm making so much money. Now, gas costs 60 cents a gallon, just to compare. But I never spent everything I had. I just kept putting it in the bank. After a while, I had like $1,000, you know, which now, you know, it's one medical bill. But back then, that was like, man, I'm good for a year or two. I had a huge margin. I had a gap between what was coming in and what was going out, so I felt rich. It had nothing to do with how much money was in the bank. You could have cut it in half and I would have felt rich because what made the difference was the margin. It was the gap. That's what brought peace. That's what brought contentment. It wasn't about how much I had. It was how big a gap I had. So practically speaking, no margin is going to bring stress. Margin brings peace. Follow me? If you want more peace, don't focus necessarily on getting more money. Focus on what's my margin? How can I increase that? How can I increase the gap between what I have and what's coming in and what's going out? Now, understand the problem in our world is we just don't think that way. We have made an equation between our standard of living, how much we have and how much we make, and the quality of our life. Follow me? And advertisers do wonderfully at connecting those things. A lot of the ads you see, the underlying assumption is if you have this standard of living, you have this much in the bank, you have this kind of car, this kind of computer, this kind of home, if you live in this place, if you've got this standard of living, you're going to have a better quality of life. What they won't tell you is that you can have an amazing house, and if you don't want to go home to it because there's so much strife there, your quality of life is not very good. There are people who have wonderful homes who don't want to spend any time in them because it's not a peaceful place. It's not a place of joy. It's a place of stress and anxiety. Quality, standard of living does not equal quality of life. It's a lie. It permeates our world. It permeates our culture. You can't get away from it. But it's not the reality. So that's one of the things. But that means then our income drives our spending. You understand what I mean? When you get an increase in your income, maybe you get a raise at work, you get a bonus, you get a new job, you get a job, whatever it is, and your income goes up, the first thing most of us do is say, okay, what am I going to buy now? Where am I going to spend this on? What's the next thing, man? I could get a better, you know, I can get a full-size TV. I can remember when we were little, it was like, can we get color now? Now it's like, well, can we get the 10-foot by 10-foot high-def TVs? But there's something in us, as soon as we get more, we think, I need to spend more. our income drives our spending. What if we said our income drives getting a bigger gap? You'll actually, practically speaking, have more peace. Peace comes from margin. It doesn't come from your income level. See, your sense of being rich or poor is based on your margin. Think about this. Most of us think if we had an income of $250,000 a year, we'd be doing pretty good. We'd say, you know what? I'd be happy. And what I want to suggest to you is, no, you wouldn't if you're also spending $250,000 a year. You will feel poor. You will not have peace because there's no margin. And the chances are you'll feel more stress. If you're making $50,000 a year and you lose your job, there are other jobs out there that make that much money. The number of jobs where you make $250,000 a year is a lot less. So if you're living at that level and spending at that level and you lose that job, I promise you your stress level will go up really high, really fast. Doesn't matter how much you're making. Your sense of peace, your sense of contentment, of well-being is based on the margin that you have, not how much is coming in. So, one other thing, without margin, what happens when an emergency hits? What happens when an unexpected expense hits you? You do without, you get really stressed, you go into debt if you can, which just creates a further downward cycle. And by the way, it's a funny thing, if you live very long, you've discovered this, emergencies always hit. Right? Cars break down, people get sick, stuff happens. That's the world we live in. It will always happen. You can expect the unexpected in terms of your finances. It will happen. So if you don't want to be stressed out by that, you build in margin. Now, I know some of you are immediately thinking, margin, that's what I need. And I need about $50 million of margin. And you're going to be stressed out if you don't have that much. That might be kind of twisting the point, just for the record. Okay? So if you want margin, you got two options. Increase your income or decrease your spending. Increase your income may or may not be possible. You have to look at your life. And the challenge there is, if you're doing that, are you also trusting in God? See, you need both of these, and they provide a little bit of a check and balance for each other. Because as soon as I said you need to increase your income, some of you went, yes! Because actually your hope is in your wealth, and you think I just said that was okay. But it's not. And I'll leave that, you just sort that out with God. The other way is to decide to decrease your spending. Now, for most of us, that's possible to some level. Now, here's the thing. Every one of us right now is living on a certain percentage of their income. Got it? For some, it's 100%. Some of you are living on 110%, which means you're going in debt and you're going downhill. Some of you are living on 80 or 90, but I will almost bet that none of you could really tell me what that percentage is. Because you just kind of fell into it, you didn't actually pick it. I would suggest the best way to build margin into your life is pick a percentage and say, you know what, I'm going to live on this percentage of my income no matter what it is, 95, 90, 80, I don't care, but to be intentional about that and say, no matter how much I get, I'm only going to live on this much. No matter how little I have, I'm going to do my best to live on this much. Now, I understand that might mean that you can't do everything you want to do or have everything you want to have. I get it. Welcome to life. That's the reality. What you will get is a growing level of peace and contentment and freedom in the area of your finances over time. Because what will happen is if you live on that margin, when emergencies come, you've got it covered. You don't have to worry when the car breaks down, oh man, how am I going to pay for these brakes? Maybe I know someone who will do it for free, and you go through every person you know and hope that someone's a mechanic. And maybe you actually have enough because you've been living with a margin that you don't have to stress about it. And what I want to suggest is do whatever you can do, do whatever you have to do legally to get there. Okay? Some of you really need that little word there, right? Legally. But make the hard choice. And there's something about the kingdom. When you make the hard choice up front, things get a lot better later in that area. The devil promises the opposite. Take the easy road now, and then you pay for it later. In the kingdom, you know what? Make the hard choice. If you have to cut your standard of living a little bit, do it. Is it worth? I mean, what would you rather have? More stuff and more stress? Or peace? Where you can actually enjoy the people around you because you're not constantly worrying about, do I have enough? Can I provide it? It'll affect your relationships. It'll affect your peace of mind. It'll affect your sleep. It'll affect every area of your life. I want to suggest that the short-term pain is worth the long-term gain. So, two things. If you will embrace and pursue them, will increase your level of financial peace. One is learning to put your hope in God and not in your wealth and not in your bank account, how big it is. Okay? If you don't do that, even if you do margin, it's not going to help you. But if you do that without margin, you're going to be fighting for that peace all the time. If you do them both, they will reinforce each other, and over time, finances will not be an area of stress for you. They'll start out as an area of peace, and they'll move to an area of joy because you'll have enough for yourself and to be able to bless other people. And let me tell you, there is tremendous joy when you have enough to pay, cover all your needs, your family's needs, and you can start to bless other people generously. When you can come and you hear about someone who's on the front end of this process, and you can say, you know what, here's $500, here's $1,000, here's $5,000. My wife and I once had someone call us over for dinner, and as a couple, each one of them gave us a check. He gave me a check, his wife gave Anita a check, and they both were the same amount, $10,000. That was a really fun dinner. We didn't know what to say at all. We're like, Pastor Broccoli. I know. But they were in a position, because they had built margin over time, to bless at an extravagant level. We were stunned. They were silly. They were giddy. They're like, this is so fun that we can give you this much money. I'm like, yeah, great. Can we meet next year? But you understand, there's joy that comes. So it starts out, wherever you are, if you trust God and build margin, over time you move to peace and eventually to joy. Now, I said in the beginning, I don't know how many of us would describe our finances as an area of peace. I suspect even less would see, man, my finances, that's an area of incredible joy for me. But it can be. That's where God wants to take us. And if you'll embrace those two habits, putting your hope in God and not in your bank account, and practically live on a percentage of your income, whatever is very intentionally, and build margin into your life, over time you'll see peace and joy grow. Underneath all of this is the heart of God for you and I. You know, it's interesting, in that first verse in 1 Timothy, Paul mentions that God, quote, richly provides us with everything for our enjoyment. That's the heart of God. Richly provides for our enjoyment. In other words, this isn't supposed to be an area of stress and striving and worry and fear. It's an area of peace and joy. That's the heart of a father. That's the heart of a God who would give his own life for you and I, who would give his own life to save us from our sin, to save us from the bad choices we made, to save us from the pit we've dug for ourselves, often spiritually, emotionally, financially, in every other way, who says, you know what, I'm willing to die for you. I love you so much. And then we think, yeah, but will you help me pay my bills? You know what? Compared to blood, money isn't a big cost for God. You understand? They're not the same. We can celebrate. This can be an area of joy because we have a God who loves us so much he would die for us, who's passionate about us having the kind of life he intends. And that's what we can celebrate. That's where we can approach this area with hope and confidence. Let's have the worship team come on up. And we're going to worship. And it's always an interesting transition. You know, we talk about something that's really practical like money, then we go into worship. But I want you to get the connection between the God who you can put your hope into, the heart of a father, and what he has for you and I. That should prompt a response that says, God, you're awesome. God, I can look forward. Your will is made clear in heaven where there's no need, there's no lack. I can look forward to that. I can look forward to being with you in heaven. I can look forward to connecting with you. And the really good news is God's desire is that we begin to taste and experience the reality of heaven now. No fear in heaven, none wanted on earth. No worry in heaven, no worry on earth. That's what God intends, that the life that we have for us in heaven, we begin to access that now.
This has been a DuPage Vineyard Church production.